Maverick News presents The Rick Walker Show. Defrag your mind.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome back to the Maverick News Channel. I'm Rick Walker. Great to have everybody here. Greetings, Maverick family and new viewers, wherever you may be tuning in from. All kinds of stuff to discuss tonight. First up, of course, will be this recognition of the one-year milestone for Evan Gershkovich, Wall Street Journal journalist, who remains in custody in prison in Russia. We'll talk about that. We will also discuss these videos that have been circulating online of people who claim to be FBI agents going to people's doors in response to posts that people have allegedly made on social media. We'll show you what that's about. Also, bomb threats leveled against or targeting the Shen Yun Performing Arts Company. We have information on that tonight as well. So lots to talk about this evening. Stay with me. I will be back on the other side of this.
News. The world is watching.
The information war is raging. Truth without integrity is worth nothing. Maverick News. Because those who have power and those who seek it must be held accountable.
The world is watching.
Join our family of truth seekers. Donate today and add your voice to the chorus of Maverick Knights. Donate at maverickdonations.com. Truth. Integrity. It's the Maverick way. Maverick News. The world is watching.
You may recall from the Tucker Carlson interview with Vladimir Putin that in the course of that interview, Tucker Carlson made reference to, asked about Evan Gershkovich, a Wall Street Journal journalist who has been in captivity over there in prison. So who is Evan Gershkovich? Well, he has now been in prison in Russia for 1 year. He was born October 26, 1991. He's known for his reporting on Russia, of course. He currently works as a reporter at the Wall Street Journal, except that he's in jail. His background includes growing up in Princeton, New Jersey. He was raised in a Russian-speaking household. He attended Princeton High School, where he excelled academically and captain of the soccer team. Later, he pursued higher education, majoring in philosophy and English. In terms of his professional career, Gershkovich has worked for several prominent media outlets, including the New York Times, the Moscow Times, Agence France Presse, before joining the Wall Street Journal in January of 2022. He spent 6 years living and working in Russia prior to his arrest, covering many major stories over there, including the war in Ukraine. So he was arrested during a reporting trip that sent shockwaves through the journalistic community. He was accused of possessing information related to a Russian defense enterprise, which led to his detention by the FSB. Despite international pressure and calls for his release, Gershkovich remained in custody facing charges of espionage. Here's the clip of Tucker Carlson bringing this matter up with Vladimir Putin in that now world-famous interview.
I just got to ask you one last question, and that's about someone who's very famous in the United States, probably not here, Evan Gershkovitz, who's the Wall Street Journal reporter. He's 32, and he's been in prison for almost a year. This is a huge story in the United States, and I just want to ask you directly, without getting into the details of it or your version of what happened, if as a sign of your decency, you would be willing to release him to us and we'll bring him back to the United States.
Мы столько сделали жестов доброй воли, что мне кажется, мы исчерпали все лимиты.
We have done so many gestures of goodwill out of decency that I think we have run out of them.
Ни разу не ответил.
Но we have never seen anyone reciprocate to us in a similar manner.
Что мы
However, in theory, we can say that we do not rule out that we can do that.
Исключаем того, что мы можем
if our partners take reciprocal steps.
Встречном движении со стороны наших.
When I talk about the partners, I first of all refer to special services.
Представители специальных служб.
Special services are in contact with one another.
Определенные условия, которые
but there are certain terms being discussed via special services channels.
Партнерским каналам между спецслужбами.
I believe an agreement can be reached.
So typically, I mean, this stuff has happened for obviously centuries. One country catches another spy within its borders, it trades it for one of its own intel guys in another country. I think what makes this, and it's not my business, but what makes this difference is the guy's obviously not a spy, he's a kid. And maybe he was breaking your law in some way, but he's not a super spy and everybody knows that. And he's being held hostage in exchange, which is true. With respect, it's true and everyone knows it's true. So maybe he's in a different category. Maybe it's not fair to ask for, you know, somebody else in exchange for letting him out. Maybe it degrades Russia to do that.
Вы знаете, можно как угодно говорить, что такое шпион, что не шпион.
You know, you can give different interpretations to what constitutes a spy.
But are you suggesting that he was working for the US government or NATO, or he was just a reporter who was given material he wasn't supposed to have? Those seem like very different things.
Я не знаю, на кого он работал. Но повторяю еще.
I don't know who he was working for. But I would like to reiterate that getting classified information in secret is called espionage. And he was working for the US Special Services, some other agencies. I don't think he was working for Monaco, as Monaco is hardly interested in getting that information. It is up to special services to come to an agreement. Some groundwork has been laid. There are people who, in our view, are not connected with special services. Let me tell you a story about a person serving a sentence in an allied country of the US. That person, due to patriotic sentiments, eliminated a bandit in one of the European capitals. During the events in the Caucasus, do you know what he was doing? I don't want to say that, but I will do it anyway. He was laying our soldiers, taken prisoner, on the road and then drove his car over their heads. What kind of person is that? Can he even be called human? But there was a patriot who eliminated him in one of the European capitals. Whether he did it of his own volition or not, that is a different question.
Yeah, but Evan Gershkovitz didn't do that. I mean, that's a completely different... I mean, this is a 32-year-old like newspaper reporter.
He committed something different. He's not just a journalist. I reiterate, he's a journalist who was secretly getting confidential information. Yes, it is different, but still, I'm talking about other people who are essentially controlled by the U.S. authorities, wherever they are serving a sentence. There is an ongoing dialogue between the special services. This has to be resolved in a calm, responsible, and professional manner. They're keeping in touch, so let them do their work. We are ready to talk. Moreover, the talks are underway. And there have been many successful examples of these talks crowned with success. Probably this is going to be crowned with success as well. But we have to come to an agreement.
So, Tucker Carlson concluded by saying he hopes Vladimir Putin lets him out. But tonight, Evan Gershkovitz has had his sentence extended by at least another 3 months. And while all that is going on, the Wall Street Journal has on the front page a giant blank space saying his story should be here. Just leaving that front page story wide open. Just a blank section on the front page of the Wall Street Journal. Journalists in the United States, prominent, mostly mainstream journalists, are conducting a sort of a readathon. They're reading his work over the course of 24 hours straight. And we have a clip of that for you here. It begins with Lester Holt of NBC. Here we go. So a little bit of a technical problem there.
Journalism is not a crime.
Journalism is not a crime.
Journalism is not a crime.
Good afternoon. My name's Emma Tucker, and I'm here to kick off this readathon for Evan.
Hello, I'm David Muir from ABC's World News Tonight.
I'm Laura Coates, CNN chief legal analyst and anchor of Laura Coates Live.
I'm Brett Baer, Fox News chief political anchor.
I'm Abby Phillip, anchor of Newsnight with Abby Phillip on CNN.
It is an honor to read from the work of our colleague Evan Gershkovitz.
I'm Nora O'Donnell, the anchor and managing editor of the CBS Evening News, and it is an honor to read from the work of Evan Gershkovitz.
And it is an honor to read from the work of our colleague Evan Gershkovitz. I am thinking at this moment about his wonderful family.
It's an honor to be here. To speak for Evan through his own words, his reporting.
One day is a long time, and his work has now been silenced for an entire year.
One day is a very long time. Evan's work has been silenced for a whole year.
This is his journalism, and journalism is not a crime.
Evan, who is now in La Fortiva prison, and he can't be released soon enough.
It's hard to believe that tomorrow marks 1 year since Evan was wrongfully detained. As we observe together this somber milestone We will continue our fight to free him.
So regardless of where you are politically, around here, we stand for media freedom. That's what this operation is about. We've filed petitions calling for an end to coercive activities and targeting of journalists, even for liquidation by the Ukrainian government. We've called out the governments here in Canada, in the United States, and in other countries for authoritarian measures, coercive measures, attacks on free speech, freedom in general. And that holds here as well. And so in this particular case, I would say it is entirely appropriate to editorialize a little bit on this, because Evan Gershkovich is a journalist with a strong track record of practicing journalism. I don't know all the circumstances surrounding his detention in Russia, but it's pretty clear to me that he is a journalist. Did he get caught up in something else? I can't say for certain. But yeah, I think that this is absolutely a story worth noting. And again, I don't think it matters if you put stock in the mainstream media or not, if you have trust in the mainstream media or not. Doesn't matter who the journalist is. If he's actually a journalist, then it's not proper to imprison someone for the work that they do. Now, I don't know. Some people I see even in the chat tonight in one of the platforms calling him a CIA spy. Well, innocent until proven guilty, I say. So let's see the evidence, and I'd like to see more of that too. And well, certainly not on the scale of demonstrations that we've seen for Julian Assange. Seems a lot of people are pretty silent from certain quarters on the Gershkovich file tonight. But in Brussels, we did see this. Let me bring up this image. There was a bit of a turnout there to support him and call for the release of Evan Gershkovich. You know, the problem with journalism these days, not a problem with journalism, but the challenge that we have on the journalistic front is that I think that journalism has been infiltrated and abused by bad actors, actual spies in some cases, and that makes it difficult for governments to distinguish between who's a spy, who's a journalist. I'm very much opposed to government using journalism or journalists or spies posing as journalists, because it puts every journalist, every real legitimate journalist in jeopardy, their safety. And it gives governments an excuse to go ahead and arrest actual journalists. I don't know exactly how you combat it, but it's something I'm very much opposed to. And you can see here, he's getting support in Australia. And here's Biden tonight, earlier today, being asked about this. Gershkovich, his family, did do an interview earlier in the day that was released earlier today anyway. Here's Biden responding to a question about this story.
Do you have a message for Evan Gershkovich and his family today, sir?
Yes.
So the word out there is that a prisoner swap of some kind could be in the works. Looks like they're talking about maybe releasing Gershkovich in exchange for a Russian who is being held on a charge of murder. But complicating things, I understand, is that the Russian who is in custody is in Germany. So, not exactly sure where that's going to end up. Here's
Jeremy, he's a good friend.
This is a friend of Gershkovich's, interviewed on CNN today.
Jeremy, he's a good friend. He's also an old roommate of yours. I mean, just the fact that he's been detained in Russia for a whole year beggars belief. I know that the last time you had contact with him, you last received a letter from Evan about 2 months ago. I mean, can you share with us a little bit more about what he said in that letter? I know it's obviously personal, but whatever you can share, and of course, how he's doing.
Yeah, first off, thanks for the opportunity to share Evan's story. Every time we can get his name out there, it helps, so we really appreciate the opportunity. I want to keep the specific details of the letters private per his request, but I can tell you in broad strokes what we discuss. As a group of friends in New York, we try and keep him sane. He's confined to a cell for 23 hours a day. And we try and inject some levity into his life in any way we can. So, we talk about sports. I talk about my upcoming wedding that I'm planning, which I'm still hopeful that he'll be in attendance. We talk about a little bit of everything. I'm a journalist as well, and we gossip about the media, and we just try and do what we can to keep him connected to all of us here at home.
There are a few things more depressing than being detained in a Russian prison with no idea when you're going to be able to get out. Just in terms of some of the images, the videos that we see, we're actually showing one of them now. You often see him in the courtroom in this sort of glass cage. Yeah. Sometimes you do see him smile, which always really surprises me. Clearly, he is there he is, smiling there. I mean, he clearly is an extremely resilient person. Can you just sort of sum up to us what he's like, his personality?
Yeah, look, I always say this, I don't say it lightly. Like, Evan is one of my favorite friends. He's a true extrovert's extrovert. He's gregarious. He's funny. He's absolutely goofy in his personal life. But in his professional life, he's a very serious reporter, and he's very dedicated to his mission. And he's able to, have his foot in both worlds in a way that's unlike anyone else I've ever seen. Looking at him in the glass box, we sort of call it a fishbowl when he does his appearances in the courtroom. It's quite dehumanizing, but if anyone's able to smile and reassure those of us here at home that he is okay, it's Evan. He's maintaining his sanity in very rough conditions. Like I said, confined to his cell for 23 hours a day. Through sheer force of will. He's reading, he's exercising, he's meditating, and he's keeping himself there, and he's keeping himself sane for all of us here.
I mean, being confined to a cell is very difficult for most people, but especially if you're an extrovert, especially if you love hanging out with your friends and you love going out and you love people and you have a gregarious personality, as all of Evan's friends says that he does. Where do you think he's drawing his strength from at a time like this?
I think he's drawing his strength from his parents and his sister. They correspond almost once a week, once every 2 weeks. And they're some of the strongest people I've ever met. I mean, we as friends can certainly advocate for Evan, but they are the ones who are talking to him, who are keeping him doing their best to keep him safe and keep him informed. From the world here at home. And so I think he's really drawing a strength from his family and also the knowledge that, his cause is one for journalism more generally, not that he wants to be in a prison cell, but that people are taking up the mantle for press freedom for him. And I think that is a source of strength for him. He's also reading, he's learning, he's watching Russian television, and he's still practicing the Russian language. Like, these are things that he went over to Russia as a reporter to do, and I think those are the things that keep him, keep his spirits up while he's in there.
I was reading an article that Evan would sometimes, you know, joke with his friends about the possibility of him being detained one day. I mean, it was just a joke, as I understand it. And normally when you joke about the worst possible thing happening, normally it never actually happens, right? You joke about it, you say it in jest to your friends, it never ever comes true. This is one of those rare situations where you joke about something and it actually happens. It actually happens. Can you just sum up where you were when you first read that one of your closest friends, one of your favorite people, had been detained in Russia just as he was joking was a possibility?
Yeah, sorry, it makes me a little emotional talking about it. Look, Evan was not naive to the risks of his reporting in Russia. He informed us of those risks. All that being said, I don't think he ever thought it would rise to this level, and we certainly never thought it did. 1 year ago, you know, I'm a late riser, and so I was in bed around 8 o'clock in the morning. I got a push alert on my phone. I believe it was from the New York Times that said a reporter had been detained in Russia. Obviously, you know, your brain goes to the worst place ever. And I'd just seen Evan 2 months before that. And we were talking, you know, over Twitter DM about a week before. So it seemed quite unreal. I rushed over, I turned on the news, and, you know, this image is seared into my mind. There's Evan, he's wearing a yellow hood. There's a gloved hand on the back of his head, kind of like this, and he's getting shuffled into a police car. You know, I thought I was still dreaming. And then all of a sudden, you know, everyone who knows me that knows that Evan and I are very close. And so my phone started blowing up. They said, is this really Evan? What's going on? Can you tell me what's going on? What's happening? And so, you know, that was a very chaotic morning, a very chaotic day. And, you know, it's not about me. And I don't say this lightly, but, you know, my life has been different ever since. Mm-hmm. You know, I think about him every single day. And,
sure you do.
You know, when I go to sleep at night, that image is in my mind.
I'm sure he's so, and his family, I'm sure his family and him are both very grateful for how much you've been advocating on his behalf. Jeremy Burke, Live for Us, thank you so much.
Okay. I'll be back. Don't go away.
Greetings, brave mavericks. Our quest for truth continues. We go beyond fake news. Together we expose propaganda. Together we pull others out of rabbit holes. We are maverick thinkers. We are all unique individuals. Defenders of individual rights and freedoms. Credible. Trusted. Grounded in reality. Maverick News, Maverick News. Defending free speech, free speech, speech. Donate at freedomreporters.com. Do it now. Tomorrow may be too late.
Too late, too late, too late.
Maverick News. The world is watching. Maverick News. The world is watching.
So I'm sure that everyone has seen the commercials for the Shen Yun show. This is a Chinese theater company based here in North America, Canada, the United States. They have a number of different performing groups that travel all across the United States and Canada performing this show that, as I understand it, I've not been to the show, but it's supposed to be a representation of Chinese culture before communism asserted itself in the country. It's very colorful, a lot of acrobatics and dancing, quite spectacular as I understand it. I've heard some people say it's a spectacular show. Well, we have received word that the theater company has now been targeted on at least, well, there are three different bomb threats targeting the theater company in Santa Barbara two times and once now in Vancouver over the course of the past 2 weeks. So this came to my attention during the day today. Obviously, an issue of real concern. It's apparently these bomb threats, which have been reported to police, and there's a police record of this stuff, and the bomb threats in some cases have come in by email, and there is evidence to suggest that these people are connected in some way to the government back in China. This is, at least this is what is being distributed. I shouldn't say distributed, but this is a copy of an email that has been made public with some redactions, obviously, here. And this has also been reported on NTD News. I can share a little bit of that broadcast from today with you as well. They seem to be, I think they're associated with the Epoch Times. Maybe not, but certainly they are connected to the Chinese community in communities in Canada and the U.S., and the Falun Gong movement, they're familiar with them. In any event, here's what they were saying about it earlier today as well.
Culture with audiences worldwide that the CCP has been trying to systematically destroy since taking power. It also uses artistic expression to expose the persecution taking place in China against people of faith.
Since its formation, Shen Yun has encountered various forms of CCP interference, harassment, and vandalism over the years. But the communist regime appears to have added a new tactic to disrupt the performances.
The performing arts group says it received three bomb threats in just over a week. NTD's Jeremy Sandberg has more on the story.
The first bomb threat against Shen Yun Performing Arts this month targeted the company's headquarters in New York. An email account with a Chinese name said they'd placed a remote control bomb and threatened to detonate it. A Shen Yun representative told the Epoch Times that the FBI is investigating the incident. Then email sent to two theaters threatened to blow up bombs if the theaters didn't cancel upcoming Shen Yun performances. Last week, an account named with Chinese characters sent an email titled "The theater has been bombed" to a California venue where Shen Yun was preparing for weekend shows. The email said, "We randomly placed a lot of bombs in the theater. Theater staff evacuated and called the police. Bomb technicians with detection canines found nothing in their search." A police spokesperson told the Epoch Times precautions were taken on the weekend with no evidence of any type of explosive device. They stated the case and information was forwarded to the FBI for further investigation. A third bomb threat was sent to a theater in Vancouver, British Columbia over the weekend, but performances weren't interrupted. A Vancouver PD spokesperson confirmed that a theater bomb threat came in Saturday, with an investigation revealing it was false. The bomb threats turned out to be empty, but it's not the only disruptive efforts the performing arts company has faced.
So, in addition to that, they have reported also incidents to police involving vandalism to their tour buses, and specifically tires being slashed. This is one of the examples where the tires are have been sliced with some sort of knife, but not all the way through. The danger there is that the tires weakened on the sidewalls could potentially have burst on the highway while going down the highway. So they're taking extra precautions now to inspect the vehicles, the buses, before heading out on the road. So I did reach out. I did speak with a spokesperson from the Fallon Data Info Center about this today, and we will be getting more information from them later tonight and possibly tomorrow, I expect, on the impact this is having on the theater company and the Chinese community here in Canada and the United States. In addition to that, I hope I still have the clip here queued up for you. We have a clip from, this is Sergeant Betsy Smith, who is a spokesperson for the National Police Association, and she was asked about this series of bomb threats coming in by email targeting the Shenyun Performing Arts Company. Here she is.
This is absolutely religious persecution, and it should be considered as a hate crime. So we are hopeful that the federal authorities, the Department of Justice, the FBI, as well as the local officials investigating this, treat it as such. The founding of this nation, one of the biggest parts of it, is freedom of religion. And that is a part of this performance. But again, ultimately, this is an artistic performance, and it needs to be protected as such. And these threats are incredibly hateful and seem to be threatening them based on their political and religious beliefs. So is it a hate crime? Absolutely.
So, as I say, we'll hopefully get further comment on this over the next day or so. Here is, this is Levi Broud of the Fallon Data Info Center. I did speak with him on the phone earlier today. This is a clip, and I'm hoping to get more information from him as well.
Particularly troubling in the context, because we have to understand, we just put out a report a couple months ago, you know, again, for a dozen years, there's been a global campaign for the CCP to silence Shenyun Performing Arts, to get their shows canceled, to target them in a myriad of number of ways. The diplomatic corps are involved. We have over 130 cases of this. And so this was sort of the latest in a long string of events targeting Shenyun in an illicit and probably illegal manner right here in the United States.
So those clips coming from Epoch Times, Epoch TV. And I am trying to arrange an interview with Mr. Broud. So stay tuned for that in the days ahead, because this has been, an ongoing issue for the theater company, not just for months, but I think even for years. So that's because of the not just the cultural aspects and the cultural elements of their show, but of course connected to the culture is the politics. It's symbiotic. There's no escaping the overlap there, right? Your culture, your politics, your communities, political ideology, and the Falun Gong. It's sort of a newer religion. I don't fully understand it, and that's one of the reasons I'd like to learn more and to give them a voice here too, because we are all about free speech. So we look forward to that. Let's take another quick break. I'll queue up some of the other stories from today because we still have a lot of ground to cover. Stay with me.
Maverick News, fighting for freedom.
Okay, you know, the news in Canada always seems to follow the news in the United States. I guess it's inevitable. Our entertainment, our media, everything is so interconnected. I think people in Canada often get confused about our own political system, our own legal system, because we watch so many programs, you know, created in the United States. Our primetime TV is American primetime TV. So I think people here have it in their heads that our system maybe works more like the U.S. system than it does. Anyway, that's kind of a sidebar. Where I'm going with this is all this talk about TikTok, the social media platform, possibly being banned in the United States. Of course, we've been watching that up here in Canada, and that is having an impact on public opinion up here in the Great White North. And of course, we have a lot of viewers on the U.S. side, and glad to have everybody here. But a new poll suggests 51% of Canadians now support banning TikTok. This after that U.S. bill, which aims to do just that, passed in the House of Representatives. So Canada has ordered its own national security review of TikTok. The Liberal government has confirmed that following the passage of that U.S. bill earlier this month. Now, just under a third of people polled, that's 28%, said they would oppose a TikTok ban in Canada. Léger Marketing, which conducted this poll, surveying a total of just over 1,600 Canadians just a few days ago, actually, say that was a fairly accurate representation of public opinion within a margin of maybe just a percentage point or two. Younger Canadians, which makes up the demographic most likely to use TikTok, are less supportive of a ban, than older adults. Nearly half of those between 18 and 34 have reported being on TikTok, compared to just 12% of poll respondents who are over the age of 55. I bring it up because I can tell you I've been dabbling with TikTok a little bit with this news platform that we've created here. And it seems to be almost fairer in many ways in the way that its algorithm works and the way that they distribute and rank content compared to what goes on YouTube and Facebook, for sure, where a lot of independent stuff seems to get suppressed. But over on TikTok, it seems to get a little more traction sometimes. It just seems to be more even-handed. But I know there is a lot of concern about possible spying or tracking of people because it's a Chinese-based social media company. But in this poll, 56% of Canadian respondents said that they heard about national security concerns. They're aware of it, but they're hearing about this from U.S. media. That's why it's giving more rise to concern over here on the Canadian side of the border. Nearly three quarters of those who were aware of those reports said that they are concerned, but most, 56%, haven't changed how they use TikTok anyway. I think that's pretty pretty much par for the course when it comes to social media and the way people use it. We know we're being tracked. We know we are the product that the social media companies are selling, and yet we just continue to use it anyway. I think it shows that the all these social media platforms are to some degree addictive. Now, four Ontario school boards, as another story connected to this, have launched a $4.5 billion lawsuit, where it's actually a several different lawsuits with a totaling $4.5 billion against social media giants, including Snapchat, TikTok, and Meta, which has Facebook and Instagram. They are accusing these social media giants of deliberately hurting students, interfering with their learning, and harming their mental health. And they're saying that this has left teachers, educators, in a position where they have to deal with the fallout from this. I totally get it. It's definitely having an impact on everyone's mental health in one way or another. We've been talking about that extensively here, not just because it's social media itself, I don't think, but it's because there's sometimes malicious content out there, propaganda, governments are manipulating us, corporations, big companies, advertising, and even just the nature of the medium itself is addictive. The social media companies also, it's been revealed, you know, that they use techniques to keep you engaged. They feed you content in a particular way, certain types of content in a particular order, in order to evoke an emotional response, get you on an emotional roller coaster ride, and sort of connect you to the medium so that you don't want to let it go. You keep on scrolling and looking at the content. So the Ontario school boards, four of them, cite student struggles with attention, learning, mental health crises as a direct result of the what they're saying is, quote, the prolific and compulsive use of social media products. They're saying that they're seeing behavioral issues such as anxiety in children being significantly on the rise. They're seeing a huge rise in mental health problems, feelings of pain. Social self-esteem issues cited by some, depression. And they are also, these school boards, saying that the medium itself, the social medium, all of these platforms have resulted in compulsive use among students. Of course, they have to prove all of this in court, and I guess also attach in some legitimate way liability to the social media companies. Who would end up benefiting from this in the end? Who would get compensation for this? I don't know if it's the school boards themselves that would ultimately be handed some sort of a victory and then compensation, or if it would end up filtering down to the students, the families. Not exactly sure what the ultimate, what a win, I guess, would look like is what I'm saying on the school board side. But lawmakers and intelligence officials have said that they worry that foreign governments could use TikTok to access user data and influence users through the social media platform's algorithm. And so as a connected to this lawsuit is also this direct concern about TikTok because of it being connected to the Chinese government. So there's that. Boy, I'll tell you, we've come a long way. When I was young, it was all about video games. Everybody was worried about video games and television. television was addictive and you shouldn't leave your kids alone watching television. And there were a lot of concerns about that. And then video games came along. I remember when I was in journalism school, I did a whole series for the college radio station about video game arcades. At the time, there was all this concern out there about video game arcades being places where young people would come and get into all kinds of trouble, and then the addictive nature of the games. And that was when there were arcades, and municipalities were passing bylaws to ban them or push them into areas where they were away from schools. I would imagine a lot of those bylaws are probably still on the books in municipalities, and yet I don't know how aggressively those bylaws are enforced these days. Not that there are that many video arcades out there anymore anyway, because everybody's playing at home online, which is just another extension of the whole social media environment, the internet. And you need to be careful what you post online, because that could potentially bring police to your door. We've shown you here what can happen with regard to that. We showed you a few months ago a clip from a Zoom meeting where a woman was threatening Prime Minister Justin Trudeau, and that resulted in her being charged. She's facing some pretty serious charges in court now. And today, there are some videos going viral the claim is that these are FBI agents showing up on the front door, the front doors of some people to be asked questions about things they posted on social media. So let me just show you, first of all, sorry, I've lost my tab here. Here we go. I've got my thread ready to go. So the first one that went viral, this was, I guess, the post. Now, supposed to be down in Oklahoma someplace. Stillwater, apparently. So these agents, I don't know if they're agents or not. They're in plain clothes. They show up in a Nissan Rogue SUV. They're at this woman's house, and they have this exchange with her. First of all, before I run this, I have to preface it by saying I don't know how authentic this is. It was posted online by a person claiming to be a lawyer for the woman who you don't see, but you can hear her in this video. These people do not look like any FBI agents that I would normally expect to see. Why they're coming as a group, I'm not sure. No government plates or FBI plates or anything like that. Some dispute here between the woman and these people who were told are FBI. She asked to see their ID. I think there was an indication where they had said that they had flashed their badges at her or something, but then they wouldn't show her the identification when she was asking to see it while her camera was rolling, because the one person said, I'm not going to show it to you on camera. So anyway, I'll let this roll, but it's not really clear to me how legitimate this is. And it's not really clear. There's a healthy dose of skepticism out there, as much as there is also a healthy dose of concern among people who are saying, why is the FBI showing up at people's doors just asking questions about something I posted online with social media? And I get that. But at the same time, a lot of people are saying this doesn't look like maybe it's even real. So until we confirm, I'm not presenting this as factual. I am showing it to you because it is kind of going semi-viral out there. It's getting a lot of attention, and people have been sending it to me. Not just one person, but several sent this to me just before airtime. So I'll share it with you, but I just want to preface it. I would not take this as being 100% for sure of anything. That's not great language I just used there, but you got the idea.
Can we just move in front of the house so the dogs don't go crazy?
Sure we can, yeah.
I need you to identify yourself and let me take imagery of your IDs.
I'm not gonna show you my credentials on the phone.
So you said you were with the FBI?
That's correct.
And why won't you show me your credentials?
We did.
I showed you my credentials. I didn't take a look at them. I said 1 second, I'll be right back.
He said he
Are you going to show me your credentials or no?
Yeah, we did already. So, and we identified ourselves. So what we'd like to do
I didn't look at your credentials again. I didn't verify them. I told you to wait and I went inside.
Okay, that's correct. What we'd like to do is just have a conversation with you about some social media posts that you've made. Would you be willing to talk to us today about that?
No, I would not. I would like you to later talk on with my lawyer.
Okay.
Do you have identification?
Do you have a card or cards? For an attorney that we can reach
no.
Out to?
No. I'll get back to you.
Do you mind just having your attorney contact the FBI office in Oklahoma City?
What's the number? What are the names of the agents?
I'll Google it for you.
So you're refusing to identify yourselves?
No, we've already identified ourselves.
Again, I did not take a look.
Okay, so the phone number for the FBI in Oklahoma City is 405-290-7770.
Okay.
If you can just call me one day,
and tell him that Facebook flagged me for posts.
Facebook gave us a couple of screenshots of your accounts.
Okay, so we no longer live in a free country and we can't say what we want?
No, we totally do. That's why we're not here to arrest you or anything like that.
Well, you can't arrest me for freedom of speech. We live in America.
Correct.
Exactly, so it's kind of weird that you want to come talk to me about me exercising my freedom of speech.
We do this every day, all day long, talk to people.
Okay.
It's just an effort to keep everybody safe, make sure that nobody has any ill will or bad intent or anything like that. And we've got no reason to believe necessarily that that's you, and that's why we just wanted to have a conversation.
So do you have a conversation with everybody on the neighborhood?
Do you have information with anybody else in the neighborhood?
I mean, all I've done is exercise my right as an American citizen on a public social media platform with my personal opinions, correct? Okay. Most of the individuals, right, in America, especially older generation, right, have Facebook. Are you questioning all the citizens in America?
We certainly would if we had any sort of concerns.
Okay, so you have concerns about my personal opinions?
If you don't want to talk to us, then you can
leave. I'm definitely not going to have a talk with you.
Well, thank you for your time this morning.
Okay, they're so-called FBI. This is Rola Abdeljawad in Stillwater, Oklahoma. This is America.
I don't know, man. It looks kind of weird to me. They don't look like cops to me, but maybe they work for the FBI. I don't know. We need more information to really understand. I did go to that woman's Facebook page. She is very pro-Palestine. I personally just didn't see anything on there myself, and I'm not going to show you the Facebook page because I can't really bring it up on the screen. I had to get somebody else on the Facebook page to show me on their account what is going on with hers because we're banned on Facebook. I can't. So frustrating. Well, there's another problem with social media and freedom of speech, right? So our account's banned on Facebook. No access. So I can't. Anyway, I was able to get somebody to take me and show me her page. I didn't see anything there, but that is not to say that material may have been deleted. Don't know. And of course, if this woman has been speaking to her lawyer, maybe her lawyer advised her to make adjustments to her page. No idea. Or maybe she didn't. As I say, we need more information. It's so easy to just jump to conclusions or get bent out of shape one way or another. I will say that you always do need to be careful speaking to anyone that claims to be a police officer, an agent with any kind of law enforcement agency, because I think anything that you say can and will be used to in a court of law if obtained in a legal manner, a lawful manner, that doesn't violate your rights. So yeah, you do need to be very careful. And I guess in that respect, the woman sort of played it right. It's not the only incident that has been reported, though, like this. There's this one here as well. I'm going to bring it up. Sort of similar in nature, but this one's involving just a guy. And again, this looks a little weird to me. Because this guy at the door, claiming to be some sort of an FBI agent, is, again, he's like carrying sort of a big notepad or you know, something to write in, almost like he's got some report or something that he's filling out. Almost looks like a person doing a survey to me more than an investigation. It's sort of an odd look. And the way this guy is dressed as well, he does not look to me like he's out working as an FBI agent, but what do I know? It just looks odd. Three of them got in that Nissan Rogue? A Rogue? Maybe. But three, and it just, that was weird. And then this guy, same sort of scenario, but he appears to be at this gentleman's home alone. Check it out.
Special agent John Gray with the FBI. How are you? Is Miss Anderson here?
She's not.
She's not. Okay. I was hoping to see if I could have a couple of minutes of her time.
She's not here.
Okay. Is she at work? Okay. Is there a chance I can make an arrangement to come back and talk to her? Or
what's it about?
It's about the Baton Rouge subject.
Special agent John Gray with the FBI. How are you?
Okay. So there's that. You could sort of hear a little bit of what he was saying. Just seems very odd. The shoes don't look right. The clothing doesn't look right. Nothing about that looks right to me. And he did say, I could hear him say, you say with the FBI, yes, sir, whatever. So he did identify himself as being with the FBI, but in what capacity? Not exactly sure. Something doesn't look right about it to me, though. And there is, as I go through the social media posts, I see a lot of people saying, I don't believe that is the FBI, so there's a lot of skepticism. But maybe they are. I have not been able to get more information than that tonight for you. And I know that there are some media outlets, smaller media outlets, you know, issuing reports on this. But how credible they are, again, I don't know. I'm going to have to say I'm going to wait and see what other information comes out. Now, Lori sent me this letter that was sent to the Libertarian Party, advising them that their account, their social media account, Facebook, I guess, appears to have been compromised. So that, of course, sparked a healthy dose of skepticism. What else would you expect from libertarians? Of course, they're going to say they don't trust the FBI or the government in general, because they're pretty much, leave me alone, right? Stop bothering me, government. So instantly, it's kind of gone there. But the FBI, I guess they did contact the Libertarian Party headquarters. told them that someone within the party, I don't know, may have been subject to being compromised or something by a foreign government. And then they followed up with this letter that basically narrows it down to this, where they're saying the FBI maintains active investigations that seek to identify the activities of hostile foreign governments and their intelligence services who target the U.S. government, private sector, and political processes. The FBI recently obtained information showing that one of these foreign threat actors was in control of various IP addresses that the group used to log into a Facebook account controlled by your organization. The group accessed the account sometime between August 2023 and February 2024. That's a 6-month period. The account in question was Facebook account number, and then it gives it here, Facebook account display name, Libertarian Party. The FBI recommends changing the account's password and enabling multi-factor authentication. So that's interesting. Why would a foreign government target the Libertarian Party? I can think of a whole bunch of reasons why a foreign government would do that. I can think of all kinds of reasons. If they could access that account, they could get into all kinds of information, obtain personal information on people, identify people, reach out to people even, and maybe even make bogus posts to further their political objectives. So I could think of a lot of reasons why. The question is, how did they gain access to it? It seems to me maybe if the FBI is telling you that, you might have a security breach on your hands. Now, it's okay. I guess it's predictable that people are going to get their backs up. But on the other hand, one, if the FBI is telling you that, maybe you ought to listen to them because maybe you do have a security breach. Two, if the FBI is showing up on your front door, maybe they do have reason to be there. They seem to be polite. At the same time, you do need to protect yourself. But in this day and age, with all the terrorism that's out there, all the national security threats, threats to people's safety, how are they supposed to do their job if the government is supposed to keep everybody safe? You have to find the right balance, right? And so, of course, they're monitoring social media all the time. I'm trying to tell people here on this channel as well that that's the new reality. Be careful what you say. Don't even joke about being violent in any way or saying that you want anything bad to happen to anyone. Because if you do, you open the door wide for police to come and charge you. If you just say the wrong thing, post the wrong thing. That's why we don't tolerate it in the chat over here. And you put people around you in jeopardy as well. So I don't know what might have been posted by any of these people. I haven't seen anything that appears to be illegal or would attract police to their front doors. But something brought them there. Maybe it was just a malicious, frivolous complaint from someone who didn't like them. Maybe that's what's going on. We don't know. Maybe the cops will end up helping that woman because maybe somebody's targeting her, sending screenshots that are bogus or fake to the cops. Again, we don't know. Maybe somebody's trying to hurt her. But there wasn't enough information in that video to really drill down and get to the truth of the matter. But it is being presented online as though the FBI is acting in a really sinister manner. I don't know. Now, we do know that we had the Twitter files, and absolutely the federal government was directing censorship online through these social media companies in an unconstitutional way on the U.S. side. We do see up here in Canada that the federal government is implementing new censorship measures through new legislation. Certainly trying to crack down on what they say is misinformation and trying to get a hold of what's going on online. And there is a lot of disinformation out there and fake stuff. But of course, if you're just using that legislation or using these tools for political purposes in order to hold on to power or gain power or expand your power politically as a government, that's inappropriate. That's wrong. But, you know, censorship is as well. It takes on a variety of different forms. It's not just what's written down in terms of legislation. Censorship, it's a coercive thing. Censorship can be imposed through fear, through peer pressure, in a variety of ways, through corrupt methods. It's a dark, slithery thing. It will creep up on you. It will, if you feel pressure in any way to censor yourself, you are a victim of censorship. If political action groups, political activists even engage in forms of censorship when they target people online that they don't like politically and try to get them canceled. When they complain over and over again to social media companies about somebody that they disagree with politically. So they'll target a Facebook page or a YouTube account and they'll file frivolous complaints over and over and over again. That's a form of censorship. Censorship comes in a wide variety. It's exercised in a wide variety of methods. It's not just, oh, there's this new censorship law. It's much deeper and darker than that. But the laws certainly help. And when you weaponize police, that is not cool. But again, I don't know what's going on there. But I'll tell you this, it's a tough gig being a cop these days. It's a tough gig trying to keep a country safe, especially here in a free society, because you're trying to find that balance all the time. You're damned if you do, and you're damned if you don't. Damned if you try to track people, look at people, see what people are saying online, even if you're just looking at open source material that is posted in public, it makes people feel very uncomfortable because they instantly go to the Big Brother argument, which I totally get, and I'm all for free speech and freedom of expression. But I also recognize that on the other side, you just let some terrorist attack happen and people scream bloody murder and they say, well, why didn't you do something about it? You knew it was coming and you didn't do anything about it, or you didn't look closely enough. You weren't using all the tools available to you to save lives. And then people scream and holler. It's a really tough gig, man. Very, very hard. So we as a society, we collectively as people, we have to find the right balance somehow. And this is a new medium that we're dealing with. It's a new reality, really. And it's going to take some time to hash all this out and get to a place where we're on a more even keel. It's just taking time. I don't know, maybe it'll take another 10 years or 20 years or 30 years, especially with artificial intelligence coming online in such a powerful way now. And then earlier this week, I mean, we just showed you that conference where the federal government in the United States is addressing exactly that issue, artificial intelligence, and the Biden administration coming out with new policies, new programs, all designed to deal with the social, the legal, the technology, all of the aspects of that, without them really being fully prepared or capable of understanding where it is really going to take us, because I don't think anybody really does have a good handle on it. Scary stuff. All I can say is, let's all try to stay calm. It's an exciting time and a scary time. Very scary. I'm optimistic, though, because, you know, at the end of the day, the issues are very much the same as they've always been. It's just that we're dealing with new technology. Once we wrap our heads around that, we should be okay. And it isn't just our government. It's governments all over the world that are dealing with this and abusing it, frankly. And individuals and companies, corporations, all kinds of players making use of it. And that's why here you see the FBI resumes outreach to social media companies over foreign propaganda. This was actually an article from, was it 2022? On MSN. Targeting foreign propaganda. Coming in and having, you know, an impact on public discourse, public attitudes, public opinion here in Canada, in the United States, this specifically dealing with the U.S. side. And this article is dealing with or making reference to programs set up under the Trump administration to address those issues of foreign influence on social media in the United States. And then those programs were suspended when Biden came into office. And then all the efforts to address cybersecurity issues, foreign propaganda issues, I think they kind of started at square one again, and they were actually put on pause sort of for a little while. And we saw, as those Twitter files were released, that the Biden administration really was directing social media companies when it came to issues of censorship, which was and is actually kind of illegal. And then we're also seeing that the FBI has put in a request to, I think it was YouTube. Was it YouTube? To get a handle on. There was a bunch of, some people who watched some videos. And this was something I was actually not going to talk about tonight, but I will just bring it up here. I want to make sure I get you the right information. So federal authorities in the U.S. asked Google for the names, addresses, telephone numbers, and user activity of accounts that watched a certain YouTube video or certain YouTube videos between January 1st and 8th back in 2023. According to unsealed court documents, this was these are documents obtained by Forbes magazine. What the video content was, we don't know. What these videos were about, we don't know. But of course, it has automatically sparked a flood of concerns about civil liberties, privacy, government overreach, totally understandable. We need more information on that for sure to find out what the heck is really going on out there. Now, again, there's this balancing act, right? Who knows what the content was? Was there some legitimate reason why these investigators needed to see that information? Was there some national security threat or overriding serious threat to public safety? Was it something related to terrorism, perhaps? We don't know. I don't know. So, again, I reserve judgment until I get more information. Is it illegal for the FBI to knock on your door and ask you questions? No, they didn't in that video. I don't think they broke any rules or any laws. It might make people feel very uncomfortable, understandably. But from what I saw, nobody did anything wrong there. The woman in the video didn't do anything wrong because she was kind of pushing back and asking questions and refusing even to answer questions, which is her constitutional right at the same time. Those people who, whatever in whatever capacity they were there under, I don't think they did anything wrong either. They were being respectful, and they were just looking for information, asking if they could speak with her, and maybe it will go further through the woman's lawyer at a later time. But I also understand why some people are downright worried about it. Me too. I don't like Big Brother watching. And Big Brother's watching. Speaking of Big Brother, how about Justin Trudeau? He's getting a pay raise coming up. April 1st, the same day that he's going to tax us more for carbon fuel. He's getting a pay raise. Do you know how much he's going to make now? Over $400,000 a year as the Prime Minister of Canada. Yeah. I think maybe some people think he already made more than that. But he's going to make over 400 grand a year. And the compensation for other members of parliament will also increase April 1st on Monday. Pierre Poilievre, the leader of the Conservative Party, will see his base pay as an MP increase as well. So I think an MP will end up making $96,800 a year. And then Poilievre will go up because he's the leader of the opposition. He'll make $299,900 per annum. The base pay for members of parliament will increase to $203,000. Up from $194,000. You get yourself elected to office, you've got yourself a pretty good little paycheck there. Not bad, eh? Nice work if you can get it. Of course, once you're in office, yeah, you might go in popular, but I rarely see a politician exit on the losing side of an election or through resignation when they're popular. They usually end up very, 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 very unpopular when they leave office. A honeymoon when they come in, less and less popular as they go along until they fall out of favor altogether. Hey, you know, the other night we had a call-in program and I think it was Gina who phoned in. One of our favorites around here. One of our Maverick family misfits. Me included. That's what we are around here. Loved you, Gina. Anyway, she was talking. I'm pretty sure it was Gina talking about olive oil. Talking about how expensive olive oil has become. And at the time, we were talking about inflation in general. And I wasn't sure why that she had been paying so much for olive oil. But now I understand it's because olive oil is like on a price spike unto its own. And I guess that's because of problems with harvesting olives. Olive harvest, rather, has not gone well in some areas, and there's a shortage. Less olives means prices are skyrocketing. So we've seen 1 liter of olive oil was around $9 on average back in 2017. And last year, according to the most recent stats that have come out, the price broke through $10 and has been on a steep climb since, going up to $12.81 for a liter in October of 2023. $14.81 per liter average price in November. It's probably even more than that now. So it's a combination of inflation plus a bad olive harvest, which has resulted in the price of olive oil going through the roof. International olive oil industry experts say that Spain's production of olive oil was down 62% last year. Spain is the biggest producer of olive oil in the world. And so its decline in production has created a lot of turmoil within the industry. Production of olive oil worldwide was down 2.31 million metric tons last year. So there you go. That's why olive oil is so darned expensive. I just found that out today. So, Gina, thanks for talking to us about that the other night. I was glad I was kind of able to clue in on that today, get a little more information about it. Also, on the war front over in Ukraine, we're seeing that Russia launched a pretty major attack. They went after some power plants overnight. The Kanev hydroelectric power plant in Cherkasy Oblast and the Dnister hydroelectric power plant in Chernivtsi Oblast. Large-scale strike targeted energy and civilian infrastructure in 10 of Ukraine's regions. And Ukraine was responding. They shot down a bunch of drones, apparently. These are Shahed drones produced and supplied, apparently, through Iran, which we've talked about before, although I understand they have been setting up some sort of an assembly or manufacturing facility using the exact same technology and components in Russia. So, following that, there was also a jet that crashed the other day. A Russian jet went straight into the water. I don't really have all the details on it, but that was also, I mean, I don't know how significant that is. It's just not that it's a small thing to have a jet crash and, you know, have the pilot ejected safely, apparently, but so much other stuff going on over there day in, day out, the destruction. I'm sure that there was a much wider spread destruction than just that. No question about it. So let me take another break here. I'll just check the wires and see if there are any updates on any of these stories we've been following. We'll be right back.
Maverick News. Fighting for freedom. Greetings, brave Mavericks. Our quest for truth continues. We go beyond fake news. Together we expose propaganda. Together we pull others out of rabbit holes. We are maverick thinkers. We are all unique individuals. Defenders of individual rights and freedoms. Credible. Trusted. Grounded in reality. Maverick News. Defending free speech. Donate at freedomreporters.com. Do it now. Tomorrow, maybe too late. Maverick News. The world is watching.
Okay, so I guess tragic story out of New York State, Moores, New York. Two men from Senegal froze to death. Their bodies were found in the snow in a wooded area close to the Canadian border. This information coming in from New York State Police. They've identified these people as Abdoulaye Ndoye, Ndongo Sari. Both of them are 25 years old, from Dakar. They were found in the border town of Moores. Border Patrol agent was on a search in the woods as part of a routine. He was there out there with a dog and detected a body under the snow, then found the second body as well. Police there saying, or authorities saying, that they think the men were in the woods, or that rather they weren't sure why the men were in the woods, rather. But this was in a rural part of New York State, and it is an area that is known as a regular, frequent place for people to try to cross illegally into the United States from Canada on foot. Autopsies have been conducted already, and it has been determined that they died due to hypothermia. The investigation there is still ongoing. I guess the number of illegal crossings at that northern border is small compared to what's going on the southern border with Mexico, much smaller. But of course, here in Canada, it's broad, expansive. There are many places which are difficult to monitor and protect, and that leaves it open to abuse. And indeed, it looks like that may have been what was going on there. So, gets us to the bottom of the hour. Well, folks, I'm going to wrap up early tonight. It is Good Friday, where we are on this Easter weekend. Tomorrow, I have a bunch of family stuff to deal with. I'm going to try to be on here, but there may not be a program tomorrow night, because I am going to be traveling during the day Saturday, because it's not just Easter weekend for me. I also have some family birthdays to attend to. So it'll be an active and happy weekend for myself, and I hope it is for you guys as well. I will try to be here tomorrow night at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, as long as I'm able to get my traveling done in time and the logistics work out, I'll be here. If not, I'll certainly try to be here on Easter Sunday to bring you the latest news stories here on the Maverick News Channel, where we have the antivirus programs for your mind. Catch y'all on the flip side.
This has been a Maverick Multimedia Production.